Right. We are holding on some Chayamidala for the fourth line. Just to finish off, by the way, yesterday I didn't have a chance to mention, but when we said at the end that there's Machloikas Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel, whether you need two or three times to establish a Chazaka, and we wound up saying, Rabbi Yosef had said, the Halacha is that in different places, depending on different Stam Mishnayis, in some cases the Halacha is like, in some cases the Halacha is like Rebbe, that you need only twice, in some cases like Reb Shimon Gamliel, that you need three times. So what's the reason for the difference between the two possibilities? So there are Mepharshim who say the difference is the ones that we say only twice. Oh, I thought you were going to dial in. Okay. Just finishing off the topic from yesterday, I was saying that we said that some things we say you need two times for Chazaka, sometimes some three. So what's the difference? Some Mepharshim say the difference is things that have to do with Sakana, you do twice. We said Mila, we said the matter of a Katlanis. You don't want to take a chance, like Rava said to Abaya, how can you take a chance and do it a third time? Whereas things that are only Dirabbanan, or the things that are Dirabbanan, like Vestis, or Shoramud, which is a matter of money, there we can be makel and say three times. Especially, actually, they say, if you want to take money away from somebody to make them, they have to pay full nezik instead of half nezik, you need three times for that. The Rebbe talks about it in an interesting sicha in Lekut HaSichas in Chelek Hey, one of the early Rashi sichas on the Rashi over there from next week's parasha, where Yaakov is concerned about that Hashem Pen Yikuren also, and he says about Binyamin that he might have an accident on the way. Rachel died on the way. Yosef died on the way. So the Rebbe gets into an analysis of this whole business of chazakas. The Rebbe points out over there that the difference between the two and three times things, rather the difference is not so much whether it's a matter of physical danger or not, or where it is versus Dirabanan or whatever. Rather, the difference is it something that nothing else, that no other outside factor basically is needed for it to happen yet again. In the case of Mila, for example, once a woman has done two bris milas for her sons and both of them died, that's it. If hemophilia runs in that family, that's all you need. They have hemophilia, and that's that. Same thing with the kaplanis. If we're saying, as we said yesterday, whether it's the mayan or the mazel, whatever it is that causes it, same idea. As opposed to, for example, the shur amud, where the shur amud, you need another factor. You need the shur's free will. I mean, okay, and it's an animal, doesn't mean like free will, so to speak, but whatever. It has to get in that kind of mood to go and gore again. So therefore there's more reason to say three times. And then similarly about the other things. Turn it up on it. We learn it up. We're not talking about killing a person necessarily. There is a difference by a shur mord whether it killed. There is a difference between a tam and a mord whether it killed a person as far as the kofer. But primarily, most of the time when we talk in the Gemara about the difference between a shur tam and shur mord, we're talking about that it gored, killed another ox.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So fourth line of Samachayim and Aleph. Tana Rabbanan. We're learning a price. Some more on this topic. Nisus Larishan, if the Samachal of Samachay Amudalif, fourth line. Samachay, yeah. Turn it up on him. Nisus Larishan, she married the first husband, she didn't have any children, and they were married for 10 years, and then they divorced, as it says in the Mishnah. L'sheni v'lohayu l'bonim, and to the second one also she didn't have any children. L'shlishi l'itinase, then she's not allowed to marry a third. Ela l'mishi yesh l'bonim. Unless that third husband already has children, which, as we said two Mishnayos ago, then in that case he doesn't really have a mitzvah period of Rivia anymore. He's already accomplished that. Okay, not according to Rivia Shura, that he's supposed to still try to have children, but at least according to the Tana of that Mishnah, that he's been Yotzer. So therefore, fine, he can marry this woman.
So he would say two.
Yeah, that's what our Mishnah also said two times. We said our Mishnah goes according to Rivia. Nisis Lamishi Ein Lebonim, but what happens if she marries somebody who does not have any children, takes it like Ksuba. Then he has to divorce her without giving her Ksuba. Because she wasn't supposed to marry this third one in the first place, because he has a mitzvah period for Rivia. And without Ksuba, basically, because right now already you have, after two times already, she has a chazaka that she's an akara, that basically she's somebody you shouldn't have married in the first place. Mashenkin, with the first two husbands, each one of them, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now, but with the first two husbands, each one of them, she at least has a valid claim that you can't necessarily take away my ksuba from me. You don't have a proof that it wasn't because of you. No, it's definitely, we do kind of consider it mekach tos, but nevertheless, he does have to divorce her. We don't say it's mekach tos and the kedushin are necker, because we try not to do that unless possible. But we do say that she can't collect Oksava. So Ibayulahu, so now they had a question. Nisus Lashlishiv Lahoyalabonim. What happens now? She married this third person who let's say already had children, so she's allowed to stay married to him. Vlahoyalabonim, and in the end she didn't have any children with him either. Can the first two husbands sue her to recover the ksuba? Are they able to tell her, look, you know, now we see that after all it was you. All this time you first Reuven divorced her, then Shimon divorced her, and we were never sure, is it Reuven, is it Shimon? Now that she's married to Levi, and we see she didn't have any children with Levi either. Obviously it must be her, it was her all along. So maybe therefore they should be able to recover the ksuba that they paid her. Or maybe not. Maybe she could counter argue. Hashtahu dekachshi. She could say, you know what? Back when I was married to you guys 20 years ago and 10 years ago, I still had the capability to have children. Now I've become weaker over the years. So yeah, the fact that I didn't have children with my third husband doesn't necessarily prove. If you guys had been fertile, you might have been able to make me pregnant. Iglai means it's real. The answer is mistabra. It's logical to say that yes, matis amr lavu hashtu udakashi. Yes, it's logical that she can make such a claim that yes, I became weak now. It might be that I used to have fertility, but I don't now anymore. And therefore they can't. So Mela, when it comes to collecting from her third husband, okay, you know, he has the chazaka of the money. She can't take it away from him without a strong raya, but for her first two husbands to get it back from her, there it's the other way around. She's muchzik in the money, they can't take it away from her. Another case. Ibayulahu, they have another question. Nisus Luravi, what happens if now she married a fourth husband? And now she had children. After all, after 30 years of waiting with the first three husbands, she finally marries the fourth one and has children. We said before that the third one has to divorce her without giving her ksuba, because she wasn't supposed to marry him. Can she now sue him to get her ksuba? After all, we see that I was fertile. After all, it's your fault that we didn't have children. Or do we say, Amrin and Losh Tikusach Yafim Diburach? Do we say to her, you know what, you're better keeping quiet than speaking up? Why? Because if she speaks up, if she wants to claim from her third husband effectively, you shouldn't have divorced me. You see, after all, I'm fertile. Well, then the get might be bottle. Then she's going to have a real problem. She's an Ashes Ish, married to another man. Her children from him are going to be Mamzerim.
Why would the get be bottle?
Because if it was a get given under a mistaken premise. He thought that he's giving her a get because she's not able to have children, and the Chachamim are telling him he has to divorce her. Turns out in the end she can have children. If he had known that, maybe he wouldn't have divorced her. So maybe she's better off keeping quiet rather than putting her current marriage into question.
Even if he had known that, he would not have divorced her. But the fact that he gave consent at the time with information he had doesn't mean that the get afterwards is invalid.
But maybe it does. If she's gonna tell him, you know what? You divorced me and didn't give me my ksuba under mistaken premises because you thought I wasn't fertile and really I am. He'll say, well, you know what? If it was under a false assumption, well, then there's no get in the first place. Then you're an Ashes Ish and your children are Mamzerim.
Can the husband change his mind?
It's not really changing his mind. It would be that retroactively it turns out all along that it was under a mistaken impression that he divorced her. Well, we said he didn't have to pay the ksuba. Yeah. So the answer is why? Well, 1 second. Demotzi amalav. Let's read the actual gemara. Because maybe he can tell her, I did not divorce you having in mind that you're capable of having children, that you're fertile. Had I known that, I never would have divorced you. And then, yes, that means that retroactively the get might be bottle. Or even, okay, maybe the get won't really be bottle, but at least you're putting the get into question. And we've talked about before the idea, you don't even want to put a get into question. Yeah? Yes.
But when he took the decision to give her the get,
I understand. But
he knew that maybe later on.
He did not. That's the thing. He was under the impression
that it might.
No, he did not. No, he did not. And as a matter of fact, actually, I mean, there's a reason why when a husband gives a get, they make him actually explicitly state that he's not doing it under any conditions or anything like that. But here, maybe they didn't do that. They just, you know, he told Yes to divorce her because she's not a boss about him. So fine, he divorces her. But now he's saying, you know what? Had I known, I never would have divorced you. Well, in that case, he's putting the Yes into question. So therefore, maybe he could claim that, and maybe therefore she's better. Maybe therefore she can't collect her Ksuba. However, Maski for a Papa, but a Papa asks back on that. What are you talking about? Ishaska anan mishaskinan. If that's the concern that we have, fine. Even if she doesn't make that claim, we would have to be concerned about that very same claim, that he would have never divorced her if he knew that she was a bas bonim.
Even if she stays quiet.
Nimsa get bottle of an am zerim. After all, you're going to have the get is going to be bottle, and her children are going to be am zerim. Ella, Amrinan, so no, rather the counter argument would be Hashtahu de Braisa. That on the contrary, just like we said before, that maybe she could claim, now I'm weak, I used to be strong, I used to be fertile, and now I'm not, we could claim the other way around. You know what? Now that I married my fourth husband, I finally found my life partner, now I feel stronger, and now, you know, I got more strength, and now I'm able to have children. Yeah, okay, but the point is, therefore, So therefore, the third husband still will be potter from, Kudashi explains, therefore, the third husband still will be potter from paying the ksuba on that basis, because it's true, when he divorced her, she in fact did not have that strength to have children, she only developed it afterwards, and according to Tosfos, therefore, because of that, means we're not concerned anymore about the possibility that the get might be bottle. When he gave her the get, it was on knowing full well that she's not a bas banim. The fact that it changed later is a new circumstance. In other words, the problem we had before is we thought the same fertility that she has now is obviously it's showing that she was fertile before. Now we're saying that no, it's a new thing. She developed a new strength that she didn't have before.
You could say also that it's the new husband.
Okay, but the point is the point is therefore there's new circumstances. So therefore, you can't say that the get would be bottle. Tosfos explains that it's a matter of the get being bottle. Rashi explains that on that basis, she can't sue her third husband for the get for the ksuba. Another case. How about hu amamina vihi amamina? As you just said, you know, it takes two to tango. So what happens if each of them is arguing? Each one is saying it's you who's the infertile one. What are we? The Pashas are still married. The question is though, it's getting close to the end of the 10 years. Let's say they're going to have to get divorced. Does he have to pay the ksuba or not? And we're talking, the pashas, we're talking over here about the third husband, because the first two husbands we have to pay the ksuba anyway. So what do we do? Amar Rabami, dvarim shebeino lebeino nemes. When it's personal things that are between him and her, meaning things that happen during intimacy that only the two of them would know about, then we believe her. We do believe if she claims that her husband is not capable of fathering children, we take her at her word. But time am I, and why is that? He came along to Yoda Bechet, because she will know, she'll be able to feel if his Zera shoots out like an arrow, which the Gemara mentions in a number of places, that only in that way is it going to be fertile? Is he going to be fertile? Is he going to be able to father children? Who, like him, like Yoda Bechet? He doesn't necessarily know whether his Zera is shooting out like that or whether it's kind of dribbling. She can feel it. So therefore, we take her at her word. It's actually a very good question, because there is a Gemara at the end of Nedarim that discusses the issue that if a woman is demanding a get on the basis of that her husband is not capable of fathering children, there actually the situation is a little bit different. She's claiming he can't get a kishuri, that he can't get an erection. Here we're talking about that it's not yoreh kaches, but whatever, similar idea. We say that we don't necessarily take her at her word because she might be trying to get out of her marriage because she wants to marry somebody else. So the Mefarshim have a lot of different discussions and a lot of different possible ways of explaining how to reconcile these two. Tosfos has a long discussion about it over here. Many other Rishonim discuss it. There's a lot of different answers. One of them is that there we're actually talking about that she's demanding the get. Here she's not demanding the get. It's based in his telling them, you know what, the 10 years are almost up. Or in the case of a third husband, you weren't supposed to get married in the first place. You got a divorce. Or she's claiming it's a ksuba. So there's a difference over there. Over there, when she's demanding a get, maybe she's doing it because she fell in love with somebody else. Here, we're based in it's forcing them to get a get anyway, and it's only a matter of getting a ksuba, then we can believe her. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Then we have a reason to...
Right.
Here.
Okay. And there is, by the way, there is a big simon in Shulchan Aruch that discusses the simon Kof Nun Dalet and Eben Ezer that discusses all these dinim, all the various possibilities where she claims he's not Yerba Kechet. She claims he doesn't have Gvurat Anoshim, meaning the power of a man to get an erection, to get a kishui. The Shach, by the way, wrote a whole sefer just on that topic. Just on the topic of this kind of argument between husband and wife, which one's argument we accept and what we do in the various cases, when we say we believe her, when we say Shema Inei Nos Navacher. Anyway, another case. Amar Yu Ezel Itziv Itza. What about if he says, you know what, instead of forcing me to divorce her, how about let me marry another wife, the Ibrahim Nafshoy, and I'll check myself. If time passes, 10 years or a couple of years, whatever it is, and we see he hasn't had children, then okay, we know it's him. Do we accept that or not? Abramavi, Afazu, you're to be a Ksuba. No, even in that case, we're going to force him to divorce the first wife and give her a Ksuba. Shani Omer, because Rabbi says, I say it, a general rule, Kolam Noisi Ishtal, Ishtal, Ishtoy, anybody who marries a second wife in addition to his first, then he has to divorce his first wife and give her a ksuba. Meaning, if he marries the second one with the consent of the first wife, that's one thing. But here, it's not necessarily with her consent. He's saying, instead of me having to divorce you, let me marry a second woman. She doesn't necessarily agree to that. She might say, you know what? Fine. Let me go marry somebody else, and give me my ksuba, and I'll go marry somebody else, and maybe I'll have children eventually that way.
He doesn't seem to be saying against the consent of his wife.
But that's what he's saying. He's saying, kolam noisi ishtalish, obviously it doesn't mean, obviously if it's with her consent, that's fine. He means against her will. And we've talked about before that even though up to Chayim D'Arben Gershom you were allowed to have two wives, we see from this Gemara and from various other places that it really was a very rare thing. On the other hand, Rava Amar, no. Noisa adam kama noshim al ishtay, a person can marry many other wives in addition to his first wife. As long as he has enough money to support them. And as we said before on Daf Mem Dalad, that as an eighth of Tovah, he shouldn't marry more than four, so he has an owner at least once a month for each of them, assuming a Tamat Chacham's owner of once a week. But Rava is saying you don't necessarily need her permission. In practice, of course, with Chayim D'Arben Gershom for Ashkenazim, it's a non-issue. And even among Sfaradim, the Ritva talks about the idea that even among Sfaradim, even before they accepted the Chayim D'Arben Gershom, in general, in those days, when a man got married, usually it would be one of the Tznoi Ksuba that he's not allowed to marry a second wife without his wife's consent. So it amounted to the same thing. How about another case, Gemara says? Who Amar Aplos B'Goyeh? So what about if the husband says, you miss...
The case of Abraham...
Same thing with Rachel and Bila, yeah. How about who Amar Aplos B'Goyeh? So if the husband says, sometime during these 10 years you miscarried, so it's coming up the end of it, it's coming their 10th anniversary, Beis Din is about to force them to divorce. He says, hold on a minute. Sometime during those 10 years you miscarried. So we reset the clock, as the Mishnah said. V'hi Amar Loy Aplos, and she says, I did not. I'm an Akara, I can't have children. So Rabami says also in this case, just like in the previous case about Dvorim Shebeina Labeina, here also Rabami says we accept her. Di'im isa di'pila, because if she really did miscarry, napsha ba'akarta le'maksika, she's not going to want to give herself a name of being an akara. It would be in her interest, in other words, to if it was really true that she miscarried, it would be more in her interest to say, yes, that's true, in order that people don't start thinking of her as an akara, because then nobody's going to want to marry her, at least nobody who wants to have children. Is going to marry her, so therefore we can accept what she said.
In other words, it doesn't favor her, so we.
So therefore, right.
We would believe.
Exactly. How about?
And we don't believe when she goes out with the.
No, so we do believe her, Rabbani's saying, therefore she didn't miscarry. We do force them to divorce after all, and she gets her ksuba. Unless it was the third husband, and then already we said there she doesn't get her ksuba because she wasn't supposed to marry him. How about another case? Yipila v'chazra v'yipila v'chazra v'yipila. What if she miscarried three times? Chosah tolan ifalim. Then she has a chazrata of miscarrying. And then what happens? Hu oma apila tshrei v'hi oma naflach. What happens now if the husband claims that she miscarried twice, and therefore I don't have to divorce her yet, and she says I miscarried three times, and therefore, the same way as we said that if she's barren, then they have to divorce after 10 years because he's not doing peri-vidavia, the same way if they miscarry, because obviously he's not doing peri-vidavia then either. So he's claiming two, she's claiming three. Amr Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, the Uvda Hava Beit Medrash. This kind of thing actually happened. The case was brought to the Beit Medrash. But Amru Hi Mehemna, and in the Beit Medrash they said, we believe her. For the same reason as before, Dame Issa, the Layakla, because if she did not in fact miscarry three times, Nafshab Nifli Le Maxika. Again, she's not going to want to have a chazaka of being a woman who miscarries unless it's really true. So if she says I miscarried three times, we should take her at her word. So we talked about that in the Mishnah. I mean, the Mishnah is saying that you do, or you have to marry another wife. In practice, the various Rishonim and Acharonim talk about various exceptions and caveats and whatnot to that. Among there's an opinion that it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. There's another opinion that even if a couple lived in Chutz La'aretz and then moved to Eretz Yisrael, then the clock resets. There's other opinions that say that Bechlal we don't do it nowadays because for one thing we don't always know whether it's him or her who has the problem and therefore what good is it going to do necessarily to divorce her and remarry when you don't know for sure that that's going to allow him to have children. Mishnah says, "Her ish mitzvah puvertiv." Yeah, a man has a mitzvah puvertiv. You have a lawyer isha, but not a woman. Rabbi Yechon and Bereka says, no, both of them have a mitzvah. Al Shneim Uaymer, the pasuk says about both of them. By Baruch Oisem Alekim, by Yemel Amalekim, Pruvu. The Ebrish benched them, Adam and Chava, and he said to them, Pruvu. So we see it applies to both. That's a different question. We talked a couple of times already that the Shilthus hold that Pruvu applies to Goyim, and most other Rishonim hold it doesn't. So you ask Menahani Mili, okay, Rabbi Yechon and Bereka, we know where we get it from Vayom Lahem Alekim, and Pruvu in the plural. Where do the Chachamim get that only a man is in Klover? Okay. Amr Rab Ilam Mishum Rab Elazar Rab Shimon, because Amakra, the Pasuk says, Umilu Asa'aretz, the Pasuk that says Pruvu continues, Umilu Asa'aretz B'chiv Shua. Fill up the land and conquer it, and therefore we learn ish darke l'kabish. A man is the normal thing is for him to conquer. V'ein ish darke l'kabish. A woman does not normally conquer. So if the pasuk is saying that Pruvu is connected with B'chiv Shua conquering the world, then it has to be specifically addressed to men. Question is, what do you mean? Adarav B'chiv Shua chati mashma. On the contrary, the word B'chiv Shua is also in the plural. You plural conquer it. So apparently it's addressed to both men and women. Well, the whole pasuk goes Vayivarach Oisam Elakim, Vayom Elahem Elakim, Pruvu Milu Asaretz V'chiv Shuha. But the word V'chiv Shuha also means, and you, plural, conquer it. Well, that's what we're saying. The fact that it's one second. There's no question, obviously, even according to the Chachamim, it takes a man and a woman to create a child. All we're saying is, which one has the actual mitzvah? Which one is mitzvah v'oisa? So we're saying based on V'chiv Shuha. But the question is, the word V'chiv Shuha itself implies both of them. In the pasuk it's written without the vav, so therefore we can read it as if it said the chabsha, and you singular lashon zachar conquer it. So we see that after all, it is the v'chabsha, the v'chiv shua is addressed only to the man. It's written in the Torah. It's one of these kriyuksiv sort of things, or yeshem l'mikra, yeshem l'masoros things. That it, the letters are written one way, and they're pronounced, and halacha mishmitina tells us that we pronounce it a different way. The Rebbe, by the way, once talked in Nun Aleph, the Rebbe gave a sicha discussing this at some length. One thing that Rebbe pointed out, after all, I mean, we know obviously it takes both men and women to create, it takes both a man and a woman to create a child, and in a way, I mean, the fact of the matter is that we do say true. You do say pru in the plural. You do say pru and v'chiv shua all in the plural. The Rebbe develops the idea in the sicha over there that basically you have there's a manly type of kibush and a womanly type of kibush. The manly one is more that you go and fight against the outside world, and the womanly one is kind of like more like working with it, working within things in a more gentle and a more womanly way. So therefore, the pasuk does in fact say v'chiv shuha in the plural, but the vav is missing to indicate the idea that kind of hamshacha is more manly thing. The man like draws it down to the woman, and from that comes the child. Long sicha, putting it like in Kabbalah Dikaisius, like that. Rav Yosef Amar Me'achar. Rav Yosef says, I have a different pasuk that proves that Puruvu is primarily directed to men. And from last week's parasha, the Ebishter says to Yaakov, Ani kel shakai prei urve. The Ebishter tells Yaakov, you be fruitful and multiply. V'laikama, Puruvu. Here it is in Lashon Yachid and in masculine. But I mean, the Ebishter is benching him, he's still going to have more. He's going to have Binyamin. Eventually, Yosef is going to have Menashe and Ephraim. But whatever, the fact that the Ebishter says it in that form, prei urve, shows that it's only for the men. Since we mentioned something that Rabbi Ilah said in the name of Rabbi Elazar ber Shimon, the Gemara mentions a couple of other things that he said. V'omer of Ilah mishum Rabbi Elazar ber Shimon, k'shem shemitzvah al adam loymer davar nishma. Just as much as it's a mitzvah for a person to say something to give somebody musar when they will listen. So it's a mitzvah on a person to not say something that's not going to be listened to. If the person's not going to accept the Torah anyway, then it's a mitzvah not to tell him. For a number of reasons, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe explains that what we're talking about over here is giving him musar in public. You give him musar in public one time. Or not one time. You give him musar in public, you got to know whether he's going to listen to it or not. If he's going to listen, then good, go ahead and do it. If not, then you're just embarrassing him for no reason anyway, then don't. As opposed to in private, the Gemara mentions in Erechin, then you have much more of a mitzvah of Tarzachah than that. You have to keep on giving him Tarzachah until he's ready to curse you or hit you with different opinions over there. But according to the Alter Rebbe, here we're talking about Barabim. And there's different other explanations. Also, one is that here we're talking about being Mechiach the Rabbim, as opposed to being mechiach an individual. Rab Abba Amachayva. So we said before, we said that it's a mitzvah. And in Gemara terminology, mitzvah means something that sort of like, it's a good thing to do, but you're not absolutely required to. As opposed to chayva means something you're required. So Rab Abba says this, that it's a mitzvah, that you're saying it's a mitzvah to not say musar when the person's not going to accept it. It's not a mitzvah, it's a chayva, it's an obligation. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Al toichach leitz penis necha." Don't give musar to the less, to the scoffer, to the cynic, because he might hate you. Hecheach lachacham v'yavecha. Give musar to the chacham, and he'll love you. So we see the pasuk is actually telling us in explicitly, don't give musar to the less who's not going to listen to you anyway. Famous story in this connection. Rabbi Yisrael Vishnitzer, one of the Chassidish Rebbe from about 100 years ago, he one time, there's a rich banker who lives in his neighborhood. Rabbi Yisrael one day goes over to the guy's house, knocks on the door, they let him in. He sits there, he sits down on a chair over there in the living room and doesn't say a word. And after a while, the banker, the maskil, is getting a little curious, what's going on over here? And he asks Rabbi Yisrael, he starts asking Rabbi Yisrael, what brings you here? And Rabbi Yisrael doesn't answer him. It's getting more and more curious. Finally, Rabbi Yisrael tells him, you know, it says in the Gemara this about not telling somebody something that they're not going to listen to anyway. Now listen, he says, you know, if I'm in my house and you're in your house, I'm not being Mekai in the mitzvah. How am I being Mekai in the mitzvah? If I come to your house and I don't say it, then I'm being Mekai in the mitzvah. So naturally, of course, this makes the guy curious. What is it that you don't want to tell me? They're sparring back and forth like this. Eventually, Rabbi Yisrael tells him, there's a poor lady here, a poor widow here in the neighborhood. Your bank has a mortgage on her house. They're about to foreclose on the mortgage. I didn't want to tell you because I know you're not going to listen anyway, but you want to know, so I'm telling you. I can't. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the bank. I told you you're not going to listen to me. Now you ruined my mitzvah. And Rabbi Yisrael leaves. Well, after all, it had an effect on the guy, and he goes and pays and pays off the mortgage out of his own pocket. Reverse psychology. A person is allowed to change
the truth when it comes to making a matter of peace.
We find at the end of Parshas Vayechi, the brothers are nervous, Yaakov has passed away, Yosef is now going to take revenge on us for everything we did to him, so they send a messenger, they tell Yosef, your father gave the following instructions before he died, he said, thus you should tell Yosef, on us son of a goyma, please forgive what your brothers did to you. Now Yaakov never said that to them, so they're changing with Pnei HaSholem. Rav Nosson, I'm a mitzvah. Rav Nosson says that it's not just mutter, it's a mitzvah. We have those three levels, basically. There's mutter, mitzvah, and chayva. So first we said mutter, now we're saying it's a mitzvah.
Shenema, Vayoma Shmuel Echelis, they just tell Shmuel to go and anoint David as the next king. Shmuel says, how can I go? Shmuel is going to, Shaul, the king, is going to hear and kill me for being a Moed B'Malchus. And the Eibishter tells him, fine, say, take along an animal for a korban, and say, you're going to Beis Lachem to bring a korban. This was after Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed. You're allowed to bring korbanos wherever you want. Wait. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught, Gadol HaSholem, you see how great is peace. Sha'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shina Boi, that even the Eivishter changed the facts. Dvei Ikuk Siva Adoni Zokin, what happens when Sarah is told by the Malachim she's going to have a baby? She laughs and she says, my master, meaning Avraham, is old. Well, the Sif Siva Nizakanti. And then what does it say? The Eivishter tells Avraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, Va Nizakanti, I'm old. Now, the Eivishter didn't sort of speak tattletale to Avraham that she said, you're old. Now, you know, and the pastor says, Avraham going to mind if she says? The fact is, he is old. He's 99. But still, the Eivishter changed it just on the off chance that it might cause some little bit of friction. I guess when he saw it in the Torah, I don't know. I mean, the Torah wasn't necessarily written. The Torah wasn't written in the form we have it in those times yet. But the big question that Mephoshim discussed with all of this, is it that you're only allowed to change, in other words, like you're allowed to tell a half-truth, or is it that you can even say an outright lie? One thing is it comes up with this last one, with Avraham and Sarah. It depends, because there's two different ways of understanding what Sarah said. Sarah's saying, Achrei bloisi hoisali edna v'adoni zokin, which means after I became old, I have youthfulness, and my master, my husband, is old. So there's two ways you could understand what she's saying. Either she's saying, how could it be that after I'm worn out and old, that I'm going to become youthful again? And number two, even if I could, Avraham is also old. Or is she saying, Chaker? She's saying the first half of the statement. Achrei bloisi hoisali edna. I became old, but yes, now I became youthful again. The Gemara says she became pierced and nida again. She got back her period. However, v'aduni zokin, but Avraham is old, how is he going to father a child? If you say the first way, then when the Eivishter is telling Avraham that she said, I'm old, then the Eivishter is sort of saying only half of the facts. He didn't tell over everything that Sarah said, but he's saying over half of it. Sarah said, I'm old. She also said, you're old, but the Eivishter leaves that out. But if he meant that, no, I know I'm youthful, I'm only concerned about that Avraham is old, then it would mean that the Eivishter is actually saying something untrue. So there's also the matter of Yosef and his brothers. So many Mephoshim say that actually the Rebbe also talked about it at length in a Sicha in Lamed Aleph. The Rebbe talked about it at great length. There is actually a Medrash that says that Mutzal B'Shaker M'Pnei Hashalem. But the Rebbe explained, our Gemara specifically uses the word L'Shanois to say not like that Medrash. You're allowed to change the truth, but it still has to have some resemblance to the actual fact. In the case of Yosef, for example, I think the Aruch HaNer points out, what it was is the brothers weren't telling a total lie. Your father gave instructions before he passed away. And that's true, he did give instructions before he passed away. The next part, where they're saying, ona sana, they're making it sound a little bit as though that's part of Yaakov's instructions, but no, it's a separate sentence. I mean, it means, please forgive what your brothers did to you. So in other words, they're not explicitly saying, they're making it sound as though Yaakov said that, but it's not really a lie. They're saying, Yaakov gave instructions before he passed away, full stop. What those instructions were, we're not bothering to mention because it's not important. Also, please forgive us.
Rashi says over there,
many times in the past, I'm 63 years old, and many times in the past you told me to do things and I've done them. So that's the kind of thing we mean, l'shanos, as opposed to l'shaker outright. Ani, I am whoever I am, and Esav b'cherecha, yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yochanan ben Bereka, I remember that we had the Tanakhama said that Piri Verivi is only...
I mean, you can say, really, that saying opposite
where it's lying. But it's better than actually saying an outright lie, though. That's the point. Because you want to say an actual lie. We said the other day, for example, that Rab told his son Chia that, you know, when I want beans, don't tell your mother that I want lentils, because that would be an outright lie. As opposed to over here, the half-truth, that's different.
As long as it's missed. dying.
No, but sometimes you need to. Mipnei hashalom. But that's what we're saying. Mipnei hashalom. We're not saying just. We're not saying as a blanket. We're not saying just you have a blanket thing to tell half truth. We're talking about mipnei hashalom.
Mipnei hashalom, you could say also an outright lie.
But we're saying, don't do that.
Right.
So the Gemara over here seems to be implying, and that's how the Rebbe explains it, don't do that.
Can we interpret, I don't know.
You'd have to look in Shulchan Aruch for that. I don't know. No, let's continue. Rebbechen Rebbe Reikah, so we said the Mishnah said, the Tanakhama said, that the Tanakhama said the Puv Rebbe is a mitzvah only on men, not on women, and Rebbechen Rebbe Reikah says it's on both. By the way, Mepharshim give a couple of interesting reasons why Taka. What we said before, we learned it from Bechipshua, the Yishavka Lechavish. But what would Taka be a logical reason to say that it's only incumbent on men? One interesting explanation that I think Ben Yoyada gives is when you get down to it, if a man is not being Mekayim Puri Vidivya, he has an option. He can marry, we said before, he can marry another wife. But a woman can't be married to two husbands. So if the Eivishter would give a woman a mitzvah Puri Vidivya, sometimes she might be stuck. Her husband doesn't want to divorce her. And her husband doesn't want to divorce her, and she doesn't have the option of going and marrying somebody else at the same time. So therefore, they have exempted her from it. Okay. Itmar. So now they set a discussion. Who is the halacha like? Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shrub and Levi. They argue about it. Chadam halacha ke Rabbi Yechon mebreka, v'chadam ein halacha ke Rabbi Yechon mebreka. One says yes, one says no. Which one said which? Tistayim de Rabbi Yechon hudama ein halacha. You can prove that Rabbi Yechon is the one who said that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yechon mebreka. Why? The Yosef Rav Abo, v'kalma v'shmeid Rav Yechon halacha, because one time Rav Abo was sitting in the yeshiva and saying in the name of Rav Yechon that the halacha is what Rav Yechon mebreika, v'adrinu Rav Ami v'Rav Asi la'apayu, and Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who also come in Rav Yechon, turn their faces away, like to express their disapproval. We don't accept that Rav Yechon said such a thing. Apparently. The Ikadamri, a different version of the story, was that Rabbi Chiya Abba Amar, that it wasn't Rabbi Bohu who said it, it was Rabbi Chiya Abba who said it, and again, they turned their faces away. Rather than explicitly call them out and say, you don't know what you're talking about, they turned their faces away. So the question is, Amar Papa, Bishleim Amanda Amar Rabbi Bohu Amar, I can understand if you say Rabbi Bohu is the one who said it, why they didn't explicitly tell him not, Mishum Kvayd Be Kesele Amar Lev Limidi, because out of honor for the emperor's palace, we find the Gemara mentions in a few places, in Ksumas and in Sanhedrin, that Rabbi Bohu was considered a very important person by the court of the Roman emperors of that time. Whenever he came there to visit, the maidservants over there of the Roman emperor would come out and sing a song in his honor. So therefore, because of the covet of the emperor, Lo Amru Lo Vilei Midi, they didn't want to tell him anything explicitly. They registered their disapproval by turning their faces away. Elamando Amru Rechir Ba'aba Amru. But if you're saying, according to the second version, that it was Rechir Ba'aba said it, Lemurle Lo Amru Rabbi Yechon Hachi. Let him tell him explicitly that Rabbi Yechonon didn't say it. So it's more logical to assume that it was Rabbi Bohu. Okay. That it was Rabbi Bohu who had said that Rabbi Yechonon held the halacha of Rabbi Yechonon Mebreika, and therefore in order not to speak out directly against him because of the covet of the covet of the emperor, therefore they just turned their faces away. Okay, my havi Allah, what's the bottom line? What's the story? Who holds what? What does Rabbi Yechonon hold? What does Rabbi Shrub and Levi hold? Tashma, the Amar of Ach Bachanina, Amar of Abo, Amar of Asi, Uvda Hava Kamej Rabbi Yechonon, the Knishta de Kesri. It happened once a case was brought to Rabbi Yechonon in the Shul of Kesri. For Amar, and he said, Yotzi is in Ksuba, that the husband has to divorce his wife and give her Ksuba. The case was that we're talking about a case of a couple that was childless. The point is not something, besides the fact that she was, the thing was like this. Before we were talking about the previous Mishnah, and the Gemara was talking about the 10 years of past and Beistin is forcing them to get divorced. Here what we're talking about is she came to Beistin to demand a divorce within the 10 years because she wanted to have children. Now, the point is like this. There's a halacha, we'll learn about it more extensively in Ksuba, it's called meredes. That if a woman refuses to be with her husband or demands a divorce when she doesn't have proper grounds for doing so, then she's called a meredes, a rebellious wife. And there's dinim about that. She loses a certain part of her Ksuba each week, and eventually she may lose the whole thing. Different dinim, we'll learn about it extensively when we get there. The point is, if the woman doesn't have a mitzvah piri v'rivya, then she has no business suing for divorce. Demanding a divorce, she'd be a meredith. the fact that Rabbi Yochanan, or at the very least, even if the husband has to give her a divorce, the Rambam holds, for example, that a woman can get a divorce on almost any grounds, but she doesn't get her ksuba. If Rabbi Yochanan is saying she gets her ksuba, implies she has valid grounds. Why would she have valid grounds? The pashtus is because that halacha, because she is mitzvah on Periv Rivia. So she has to go and be able to marry somebody else to do it. The if she doesn't have a mitzvah of Periv Rivia, ksuba maya bita, then what's she doing getting her ksuba? She's a meredith. So therefore, that would prove that Rabbi Yochanan holds that yes, women are mitzvah in Periv Rivia, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Bereka from the Mishnah. Question is, not necessarily. Dilma b'bal machmas taina could be that no, maybe she doesn't have a mitzvah period of rediva, but in this case, maybe she had a valid argument that she has valid grounds. How? Kiyahi dasoy lekamed Rav Ami. For example, there was a woman who came to Rav Ami to demand a divorce because she and her husband weren't having children. Amr lei havli ksuba, and she says to him, give me my ksuba. Amr la, and Rav Ami tells her. And Rav Ami tells her, Zil, go away, let mifkadis. You don't have a mitzvah period of you. You don't have any grounds to ask for a divorce. And Omrele, but she answers him, I do. Misivu dila my tevi Allah dehachitza. When she, meaning I, get old, what's going to be with me? In other words, I need somebody to support me in my old age. My husband's not necessarily going to be around. I need children. So Rav Ami said, you know what? In a case like this, yes, we would have to force the husband to divorce her. Because she may not have an actual mitzvah, but she does have a good argument. She needs children to support her in her old age. Apparently not. Ksuba is only meant to be enough to live on for a year. Similarly, there was a woman who came to Rav Nachman, again, to demand a divorce. Again, he told her, you don't have a mitzvah, what are you doing? Amrilay, she says the same kind of thing. Doesn't that person, meaning herself, don't I need a cane to lean on when I'm old and a spade to bury? In other words, again, I need somebody. I need children who'll look after me when I'm old and who'll bury me after 120. Chutra is a stick, meaning a cane. Yeah, and a moro means a spade to bury. And again, Omar, Kihal Vadek Kafinin. And Nachman said, you know what, that's a valid point in that case. Yes, her husband should be forced to give her a get. Had she not spoken up, then we would have said no. Yeah? Going back to the matter of Puri Vidivya, whether women have a mitzvah of it or not, the Gemara tells the case, Yehuda v'chizki atoimim ha'yu. This Yehuda and Chizki are the two sons of Rav Chiya. They were twins. One was finished and born after 9 months pregnancy, the other one at the beginning of 7 months. So in other words, their mother became pregnant with them at the same time. So I guess there's two possibilities. One is their mother became pregnant with them at the same time. Well, no, we're saying they're twins. So yeah, their mother became pregnant with them at the same time, but one was born after 7 months, or after 6 months and a little bit, and which we said before was a viable pregnancy, and the other one stayed in for another 3 months. So she has, usually having twins is a labor saving device. You only have to go through one labor instead of two. Here she actually has to go through two. So Yehudis Dreisu de Rav Chiya Havalatzar Leda. So this Yehud, that was her name, Yehudis, Rav Chiya's wife, had pains from childbirth. Shanoi Mana, so she dressed up in different clothing, so he wouldn't recognize her. Vasoy Lakameh de Rav Chiya. Vasoy Lakameh de Rav Chiya, and she came to ask Rav Chiya, Shaila. But Shanimana means she changed her clothing. She dressed up in different clothing, so Rav Chiya wouldn't recognize her own husband. Amran, she asked him a shayla. It's a mifkada piriv rivya. Does a woman have a mitzvah puruvu? Amal Allah. He says no. Like our Mishnah. Well, Azla Ishtiya Samadakarta. So she said in that case, then she went and drank a potion to make herself barren, which we learned about in Shabbos, the ingredients of it.
She was pregnant?
No, she wasn't pregnant. She had already had, the mother was going to say in a second, she'd already had two sets of twins. She'd already had two sets of twins at that time. Now she's asking, look, do women have a mitzvah period of Rivia? When he says no, then and we mean not just basic period of Rivia they'd already done because they already had a boy and a girl. But she's talking about, do I have, you know, the extended thing that Rabbi Yeshua said that you should keep on having children? And he says no. So in that case, okay, she feels free to drink this potion to make her infertile. And this comes up in halacha, by the way. Technically, there is less issue in halacha with female birth control than with male birth control, because of what we're saying over here, that women don't have a mitzvah period of rivia. As long as her husband was mechayim the mitzvah, already right. There's much less of an issue. It's still, you know, it's not. You don't do it. The Rebbe talked many times, in particular in Tapshin Mem, the Rebbe gave a long sicha about against family planning. The whole idea that people feel they have to space out the children because of finances or whatever. The Rebbe pointed out, the Eibishter who gives life can also provide parnasa. But where it's necessary for medical or for health reasons or whatever, there's less of an issue with a woman taking birth control than a man. And that's based on our Gemara over here. Anyway, L'soif Iglai Milsa, eventually, Chia found out what happened, that this woman who came to ask him this shayla was none other than his own wife, Yehudis. Amalai said to her, Echu yaldas lichoda kreis achrita. I wish at least you had had one more set of twins for me. What do you mean set of... Echu halavai yaldas li, you had born for me, choda kreis achrita. Another stomach full, meaning another pair of twins. Why? What do we mean? Another pair of twins? Yehuda b'chizki achi, pazi b'tavi achvasa. Yehuda and Chizki, as we just said, were twins. They were Rechia's sons, and he and his wife Yehudis also had twin daughters, pazi and tavi. So we see that Yehudis was tended to have twins. So that's what Rechia is saying. Halabai, at least you had one more pair. Question is, the Gemara asks, "Valay miftidi? You're telling me women don't have mitzvah period b'rivia?" Amar of Achav Barav Ketina Amar of Yitzchok. Might be Isha Achas Shechetzi Shifchav Chetzi Baschur. And it happened there was a certain woman who was half slave and half free. V'kafu et Rabba v'asa baschur. And they forced her master to make her completely free, to free the other half of her. Now, with a male slave, we said before in the Masechta, we had in Chagiga, and we had in a few places that yes. Beit Shammai held the Chachila, and eventually Bethil agreed with them that, yeah, you have to force his master to free him, because otherwise he can't get married. He can't marry a Shifcha because he's half free, and he can't marry a Bat Yisrael because he's half slave. If we're saying a woman doesn't have a mitzvah of period v'rivia, apparently, according to both Beit Shammai and Bethil, she could go on like that indefinitely, and yet we're saying over here we forced her master to free her. That shows that they don't have, that she does have a mitzvah of period v'rivia. The answer is no. The difference is that in this case, because she wasn't able to get married, people were treating her, and she herself, I guess, was treating her hefker. She says, but she was treating herself like as hefker, like anybody who wants to be with her can be with her. So because of that takala that's coming to people, therefore they forced her master to free her. Had she been a sneistic woman, then they wouldn't have. Now she's a Bat Yisrael. Now she's a Bat Yisrael. Now she can marry a Ben Yisrael. Before, she was stuck. She was in limbo. So therefore, she felt, you know what, I may as well just sleep around. Now that she's a Bat Yisrael, at least she's able to get married. Yeah. We learned, so the last couple of Mishnayos and the Gemaras had gone into the whole matter of Piri Vidivya, but previously, the previous Mishnayos in the last Perek had been talking about who a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hediot are and aren't allowed to marry. And we mentioned in that connection how that's relevant to whether their wives are allowed to eat truma or not. So our perek and the beginning of the next perek are going to be talking more about these dinim, more about the dinim of which members of the household of a kohen are and aren't allowed to eat truma. Basically, to summarize it, and this is going to be the kolim that we're going to be using. The kohen himself obviously is allowed to eat truma. His wife is allowed to. The pasuk says like this. The pasuk says, "V'koyin ki yikne nefesh kinyan kasper." That if a koyin buys a person with his money, then that person is allowed to eat truma. So that means slaves. It means avodim k'nanim. It doesn't mean Jewish slaves, by the way, because an eved ivri, the koyin doesn't own the master doesn't own the eved ivri's body. It's just he's effectively like a hired worker. But he owns an eved k'nani's body, as we said previously when we had the sugya of avodim k'nanim. So the eved k'nani can eat. His wife can also eat, because his wife, he's koiner with kesef, koiner with kesef b'shtar u'biyah. So if he's koiner with kesef, then she can eat on that basis. She's considered kinyan kasper, and the Gemara explains in Kedushin also if he was koiner b'shtar u'biyah. So midaraisa, the Gemara explains in Ksubas, technically, and we talked about this before, technically she could already from the Kedushin. Midrabanan, she can't. We talked the reason a week or two ago. We'll have it again in Ksubas, don't worry. What? Okay. I don't know. I've learned parts of Kedushin. I don't think I've learned all of it. So I don't remember. But, okay. Anyway. So his wife is allowed to eat. His slaves are allowed to eat, and the slaves of his wife, as we're going to discuss, are also allowed to, under certain circumstances. Anyway, One more din that we need to know that's going to be important in this perek is if the kohen dies and his wife was a bat Yisrael, then she becomes also Tirum again. She's a Zara again, unless she had children from him, and then she's mutter to eat because of those children, because she's a mother to children of a kohenim. Therefore, she's allowed to eat on that basis.
Even if they married and they go.
Yes. As long as she has descendants from her husband, the Kohen, then she's allowed to continue eating Terumah. Conversely, if she was a Bas Kohen who married Yisrael, she becomes also to eat Terumah when she's Niskadish to him. If he dies or divorces her and she doesn't have any children from any descendants at all from him, then she's allowed to go back to her father's house and eat Terumah there. Provided that she didn't become a Halala during that time. If she became a Halala, if, for example, she was a Grusha who married a Kohen where then she becomes a Halala, then no. Basically those klalim are going to be what our perek is focusing on. The Mishnah says, Almana the Kohen Gadol, if an Almana marries the Kohen Gadol, Grusha the Chalutza the Kohen Hedyet, or Grusha the Chalutza marry the Kohen Hedyet, then, one more thing we need to know in order to understand this Mishnah and the Gemara on it is there's two different types. We mentioned it briefly. We had a sugya about it before on Lamaches, Lamates. There's two different kinds of property that a woman brings into a marriage. They're called Nichset Sain Barzel and Nichset Melug. Nichset Sain Barzel is, this is, the woman brings in certain nechassim, let's say, for purposes, our Mishnah is going to be talking about slaves. There's two different possibilities. One is that the value of those slaves, or whatever it is that she brings in, is written into the ksuba. The husband owes her that amount if he dies before her, or if he divorces her. Doesn't matter whether they went up in price, whether they went down in price, whether they're even dead, whatever it is, he owes her that amount that was written into the ksuba. Those are called nichset tzon barzel. Called tzon barzel literally means iron sheet, because that was a very common way that people would make an arrangement in those days, like you'll take care of my sheep, you'll raise my sheep for me, and I'll pay you for the job of raising them, and in return I have an ironclad investment over here. No matter what happens, I'm going to get back my initial investment. So it's like iron. It's like solid thing. That's nichset tzon barzel. So the point is the nichset tzon barzel become the husband's property. He owes the wife the amount, the avodim, let's say, they become his avodim now, effectively. Although the Gemara is going to discuss that. But for purposes of our Mishnah, let's assume he owns these avodim now. He just owes her 100 or whatever it is, dollars per eved if he divorces her or if he dies. That's nichset tzon barzel. Nichset Melug is she retains ownership of the property. The husband is entitled to the payrus of it. So in the case of Avadim, for example, the husband is entitled to have the Avadim work for him, but the actual Avadim themselves remain hers. Right. So therefore, the difference is, the Mishnah says, this wife... What? If she has a bank account? I don't know. I mean, a bank... It could be either. It could be written into the ksuba as nichset tzon barzel, or it could be decided as nichset melug. It could be that they do some of it as one and some. I don't know. Also, by the way, if she gets any property during the marriage, then it also becomes nichset melug automatically. So, hichnisolay avdim melug va'avdet tzon barzel. So, if she brings into the marriage both some avadim who are melug and some who are nichset tzon barzel. So, Abde Melug lo yoichlu b'truma, the ones who are Melug are not going to be allowed to eat truma for reasons that the Gemara will discuss. But for our purposes, let's just consider those slaves still are considered to belong to her. And she is possible to marry the Kohen. Abde Tzon Barzo yoichlu, whereas the Tzon Barzo ones are allowed to eat truma because effectively now they belong to the husband. Elohein Abde Melug, what's the definition of Melug? Im meisu meisu la ve meisiru esiru la. We say that if they die, then it's her loss, and if they increase in value, then it's her gain. The Afa Pishu Chayibim is a nice one. Even though the husband is responsible for feeding these Avadim, because he's responsible for taking care of his wife's property, Hareel Elo Yechel B'Truma. Nevertheless, in this case of our Mishnah, they're not allowed to eat Truma. Because he himself doesn't own them, his wife does, and we'll talk about in the Gemara, what problem that creates. The Elo in Avdet Tzon Barzel, what's the definition of Tzon Barzel? In Mesu Mesu Loi Ve Mesiru Esiru Loi, where we say that if they die, it's his loss, and if they increase, it's his gain. Meaning, in other words, each Eved, let's say that, each Eved was valued at $100 when she got married to him. So now the Eved died, then he's out $100, which he owes her. And if the Eved now instead is worth $500, he still only owes her $100.
At what point
when he divorces her or when he dies, then it comes out of his estate. So then, so he's responsible for anything that happens to them. Then, then they can eat truma because they're considered his. Another case, Bas Yisrael, this was talking about where the woman was possible to marry the Kohen. How about another case, Bas Yisrael Shenissus the Kohen, a regular Bas Yisrael, who is not possible, who married a Kohen, and she brings in slaves into the marriage. Bain Abdi Malug Bain Abdi at the time of the marriage, yeah. Bain Abdi Malug Bain Abdi Tern Barzal. So whether they're Malug or whether they're Tern Barzal, Harela Yochel Truma, then they're allowed to eat Truma because once she's allowed to eat, so are they. Or Bas Koyin Shenissus Yisrael. On the other hand, if a Bas Koyin marries Yisrael, and she brings him, she brings Avadim into the marriage, again, Bain Abdi Malug Bain Abdi Tern Barzal, whether they're whatever kind they are, Malug or Tern Barzal, Harela Yochel Truma, then they can't eat Truma because she herself can't eat Truma at this point either. Even though she's a Bas Koyin, she's married to Yisrael, and that disqualified her from eating Truma.